Folks, today I'm glad this worked out, and of course we've turned your Sunday kind of upside down, haven't we? Just the way you're seated, all of that stuff. But thank you for being patient and flexible. So Carolyn and I have been with the Friends of Israel since 2017. I first met Sam and Marie when I was pastoring in Olympia, Washington. But God led us to be a church ministry representative for the Friends of Israel. So we travel extensively throughout the West, teaching about the Jewish people and Israel historically, biblically, of course, historically, currently, and prophetically as well. And part of what we do, we teach about the feasts of Israel. We'll enjoy that a little bit later when we go through a Passover Seder. So we teach through that. And of course, right now, with what Israel's going through, that's a very prominent discussion. It should be for believers. And you might be surprised to know there are many churches who don't give even a hint of praying for Israel, and it's a sad thing. But thank you for praying for Israel and your interest in that as well. What I'd like to share today, by the way, is about how to answer some of the questions. But before I do, I want to just hear some shameless advertisements. So came in, there is a table over there. We have only three copies of Israel My Glory left. We've run out. If you'd like a copy of Israel My Glory, take what's there, but you can also sign up for a year for free and get this. It's a great magazine. When I was pastoring, it is one magazine I read from cover to cover just because of its doctrinal content, but also it's up to date with what's going on in the Middle East and with Israel. So it's a wonderful magazine. There's also some different flyers on the table. If you're interested, Friends of Israel offers online courses for free. One's called Bridges. It's a 9-week online course that is free, and also it's kind of an internship with the Friends of Israel. You don't become officially part of Friends of Israel and all that. There's no obligation, but it's very informative. There's also, from time to time, we have FOI Equip, and these are classes that are also free, and they're different topics that are taught online. One of my favorites to promote is a podcast called The Jew and Gentile Podcast. Now, Steve Herzig and Chris Katulka are the hosts of The Jew and Gentile. Steve Herzig is the Jewish man, Chris Katulka the Gentile, and they have a ball. They teach you the Yiddish word of the day. They get into all kinds of stuff, but then they teach the Word of God as well. So that is something you might be interested in as well. So those are over at the table. Grab that today, if you will. So I'm sure you've heard what's going on today. Important things first. Our family. All right. Now, Carolyn and I are the parents of 7 adult children. Now, 6 girls and 1 boy was our family we raised. They're all older now, and this is the part we like to brag about, because before this picture was taken, we had 4 grandkids already. Within the last year, we've added 5. So, yeah, see, I knew that you guys would want to see that. This is the twins. This is Charlotte, and this is Miles. Our drama queen, Josie. And then we have Jason, and Jason and his parents now are in Indonesia. He's a missionary pilot with Missionary Aviation Fellowship. He has an older brother, William, and the parents had the audacity to take our grandkids to Indonesia with them. So, this is our newest. This is Callahan. He was born a couple months ago. So this is our newest addition. We now have 9 grandkids. And while Carolyn and I have 6 girls and 1 boy, we now have 7 grandsons and 2 granddaughters. So that's our family. And most of them live in the Spokane area. That's where we live. So, and by the way, just to promote this, Tammy was telling me that she came up to a prophecy conference we had in Spokane. We do that every year, and this year we'll do it again in October. So we will have what's called Prophecy Up Close. And some of you will hear about it, and you are certainly invited to come for it. It's a Saturday conference. This year the theme is Israel's resilience and their struggle to survive. So it has everything to do with what's really going on today. But anyway, it's $15 for the day. You get lunch, and so it's a great experience.
We'll be there.
All right, good deal. I think October 19th at Valley Bible Church in Spokane is where it's going to be held this year. So that's our family. And now, today, if you've got notes in front of you as well, you should have some notes. The topic I want to talk about is, whose land is it anyway? What a controversy, right? Now, there is one book on the table you could buy if you'd like. It's called, that's the picture of it, Whose Land Is It Anyway? And it's very informative. It's going to take what I'm talking about today and go a little bit further with it. It's a great little resource. You can order that from the Friends of Israel. And on the table, we have this little wonderful coupon, 10% off free shipping. Anything that Friends of Israel sells in their bookstore, you can use. There's a little code that you put in on there. And this doesn't expire. You can use it as many times as you like. So anything that you want from Friends of Israel is 10% off free shipping. So grab a card. It also has our information on the other side. Now, another resource as we get into this, Stand With Us is a Jewish ministry. They're not Christian, but they are a wonderful resource. We happen to have this Israel timeline. That's a bigger look at it. But this goes back to 3,000 years ago, and it gives the whole timeline of Israel's existence in the land from their perspective. Great little resource. You can buy it, or you can download it on your off your computer as well. But it goes through every year dating back 3,000 years, goes back to 586 BC and even before that. So anyway, if you're looking for a resource, Stand With Us is a great organization, has tons of material that are well done. So anyway, just if you're interested in that. So no doubt you've heard things like Israel is an apartheid state and so on and so forth. And we look at this map, the yellowish, that's all the Arab world. Now, when you look at that, just the real estate involved here, Iran's not on the picture here because they're not Arab, they are Persian. So if you were to put a map up here about the Muslim world, it look really different. When you look at this, though, take a good look at how much Arab land there is. And there are 352 plus million Arabs living in that part of the world. And then you look up here with that little blue sliver of land called Israel, about the size of New Jersey. And there are 9 million people living there today. 7 million are Jews. 2 million are Arabs in Israel. And when you look at the map, you say, how is this little sliver of land and 7 million people any threat whatsoever to the vast land of the Arabs by 352 plus million? How is it? What's behind all of this? Why such vile hatred? And boy, you just watch the news. What's going on in our campuses across our country? On October 7th, when Israel was attacked, 1,200 were barbarically murdered, raped, abused in every way. Stories continue to come out that are just gut-wrenching and heart-wrenching what happened. 3,500 terrorists moved in and did that. They took over 200 hostages. 130 are still being held. This goes on and on. Now, after October 7th, Israel had the sympathies of the world for about a day or two. And it began to turn. And it wasn't just pro-Palestinian. Now what has happened, have you noticed? It's gone pro-Hamas. It's unbelievable what is going on. And these people, when you watch these news reports, they are unhinged. And they're screaming against Israel. And they're screaming in favor of Hamas. And most of these kids that are doing it have no clue what they're talking about. I remember one interview of one of these young gals was saying, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. What river are they talking about? I don't know. Well, what sea? Well, the river must be the one in Gaza, is what they said. And the sea, they don't know. They just don't know. And one interview they were talking about, they were at this protest. I don't remember if it was at Columbia University, where it was. But these gals were saying, we don't know, we're not sure what we're protesting. Do you know why we're here? The other gal, no, I'm not really sure. We better look into that. But it's about, you know, we're against Israel because of genocide. It's like, well. So, no doubt these are things that you hear. Israel is an apartheid state. Israel commits genocide. They're involved with ethnic cleansing. You hear all this all the time. They stole the land. They are illegal occupiers of the land. You've heard all of this, social media, mainline news sources, and we're getting all of this, a steady diet of it. And this is what the protests are about, and they're demanding that these universities divest from Israel and everything because they're in favor of, because Gaza is an open-air prison, for crying out loud. That's what they're saying. Now, I'm going to tell you, I was there a year ago March and with a group, and we were down by Gaza in a little town called Sderot. Much of Sderot was really ransacked and devastated on October 7th. But as we stood there, we're looking down into Gaza, and they say that 15,000 Gazans a day drive into Israel and go to work and then go back. They have freedom to do that. Can a Jewish person go into Gaza? No way. Their life would be threatened. Jewish people cannot travel into the little town of Bethlehem. It's held by the Arabs. And it's held, and by their signs as you go into Bethlehem, that no Jews allowed for fear of death. They are threatened with death if they wander into Bethlehem. Now, I lay all that out for you because you say, wow, this is what's going on? This is the International Court of Justice. The International Court of Justice met after October 7th because South Africa brought charges of genocide and apartheid about Israel to the International Court of Justice. Now, mind you, they didn't have one shred of evidence. They criticized Israel, but they didn't condemn Israel. But that didn't stop Erdogan, the president of Turkey, by saying this. We hope that this decision really wasn't a decision. In fact, they've gone on record to say that they really found no fault with Israel. They didn't bring charges against them. But Erdogan said, we hope this decision, which is binding on the country's party to the Genocide Convention, will lead to an end of Israel's indiscriminate attacks against women, children, and the elderly, Erdogan said. No proof. On Thursday, the Turkish president said, this is a while back now, said his country would make every effort to ensure Israel's appropriate punishment in the ongoing genocide case. Now, I could go on and on with this, and we could provide all kinds of evidence. I have an article here about just the instances on the rise of anti-Semitism, not just around the world, but in our country. They say since October 7th, anti-Semitism has risen 337% in our country, at least the acts of anti-Semitism. Really, folks, I think we should change that. I heard this the other day. It's no longer anti-Semitism. It's flat-out Jewish hatred is what it's become. It's a hatred of the Jewish people. Hamas's own charter, and you, by the way, if you were to, you can go online and find this, the charter of the Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas of Palestine. I downloaded this. They have a charter, and Article 14, let me just read part of it. This is what's driving this. In Gaza today, 90% of the people supported Hamas and what they did on October 7th. And there was visible proof after October 7th, people in Gaza were dancing in the streets to celebrate the death of the Jews. So people today are standing up in favor and say, those poor Gazans, well, they voted in Hamas in 2006 when Israel handed the country of Gaza back, or gave it to the Gazans, to the Palestinians there. They voted in Hamas, and they've never had an election since. But here's part of their charter. Our battle with the Jews is long and dangerous, requiring all dedicated efforts. It is a phase which must be allowed by succeeding phases, a battalion which must be supported by battalion after battalion of the divided Arab and Islamic world until the enemy is overcome and the victory of Allah descends. Who's the enemy? The Jews. The Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, is a link in a long chain of the jihad against the Zionist occupation, which is connected and tied with the initiation of jihad. And then it goes on, even though the Islamic resistance movement looks forward to fulfill the promise of Allah, no matter how long it takes, the last hour would not come until the Muslims fight against the Jews and the Muslims would kill them, and until the Jews would hide themselves behind a stone or a tree, and a stone or a tree would say, Muslim or servant of Allah, there is a Jew behind me. Come and kill him. This is the charter. This is the intent of Hamas today. This is the intent of Islamic Jihad, is to rid the world of the Jewish people. Why? From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free doesn't mean let's move the Jews to another land. It means kill them. Eradicate the world of the dirty Jew. So, I'm here to share with you. I'm preaching to the choir. I get that. But the reason I bring this up is because you probably know people, or you may run across people, in this increasingly anti-Jewish world. To answer some of those questions about apartheid, genocide, because people are getting that. How do you answer that? Well, let's talk about this. And I love Golda Meir's statement back. It says, there will be peace in the Middle East only when the Arabs love their children more than they hate Israel. And I would say, love their women and children more than they hate Israel, because we know that Hamas used and continues to use women and children as human shields. They've dug their tunnels, they're hiding away, they hide in hospitals and schools to gain their victory. Thankfully, Israel is gaining that victory today. They were ready as of the other day to go into Rafah, and the world tells them, and the United States says, don't do it, and Netanyahu says, regardless of what the world says, we must do this. Folks, we stand with Israel because they're God's chosen people, but also because these human rights violations have not occurred on the Israeli side, but certainly on the side of Hamas. And Hamas needs to be eradicated, but make no mistake, what else is going on up north by Hezbollah, well-financed by Iran, and Iran has every bit to do with this, by the way, and Russia, and Syria. Israel is better prepared now than October 7th, but read the other day that Iran sent in over 300, between the drones, the ballistic missiles and such, they sent in over 300, and 99% of what was sent in was shot down. Iron Dome and their own defense forces. But folks, listen to this very carefully. If they took out 90%, they would have been rejoicing. But with 99% in Israel today, they recognize this was more than Iron Dome. They recognized, as a nation, which is basically an atheistic nation, they recognized there was something supernatural protecting them as a nation. That's kind of a game changer in Israel, the fact that they realize there's a greater power than us. You know, Israel is a very proud nation. When they say never again, they believe they're the ones that are going to not experience a Holocaust because they're going to protect themselves. The truth is, they need to know that they are God's chosen people and that God is protecting them. There's no way that Iran will be able to nuke Israel off the face of the earth, because God's promise is to restore Israel one day. Now, with all that said, let's dive into some history here. I love history. We're going to, I tell people, buckle up, because here we go. We're going to go on a quick tour of history. If you go well back in time, back to the 1200s, 1300s, the Ottoman Empire, which was an Islamic caliphate, what is that? That's a state, really, if you will. A caliphate is a place that's been taken over by Islam, and they run it as their own country. That's what a caliphate is. Their view, according to Allah, is once they take a land, they can't give it back up because Allah won't let them. So therefore, if they conquer a land, in their view, you can't be conquered. It's yours, although they took it. And they're the occupiers. That's what the Ottoman Empire did. Take a look at this map.
This, of course, the blue is water, but over time, this is what the caliphate was. All of the colored countries, that was the Ottoman Empire. It was vast, and it was huge. The Ottoman Empire also, Israel today, it was part of that caliphate, of that Ottoman Empire. This went on from 1299 until the Ottoman Empire was dissolved right after World War I. We'll talk about that in a moment here as well. So we look at this. The Ottoman Empire actually sided with Germany in World War I. They picked the wrong side. And we know from 1914 to 18. But post-war treaties that were led by the League of Nations. Now our president, Woodrow Wilson, at that time was the main architect of the League of Nations. And the League of Nations, they were formed, and that was under their leadership, the Ottoman Empire was essentially dissolved. And they began to partition out the land that was formerly the Ottoman Empire. Now, what happened with that, the League of Nations looked at what's modern-day Syria and Lebanon and said the French are going to be in charge of that. They're going to legislate that. So they gave them the mandate. The League of Nations then gave what was modern day Palestine and Iraq, the Brits were given a mandate over that part of the country. Now, first of all, remember this. When you hear that Israel is an illegal occupier and they stole the land, remember this very well. Who gave the land to whom? Well, it was an Ottoman Empire that was dissolved by the League of Nations, the global entity, and they gave what was then Palestine to the British. Now, the Jews didn't take the land. There were Jews living in the land. Now, go back in time, way back. We're going to take a quick detour from this. You go back to 135, Hadrian was emperor of Rome. Hated the Jews, kicked the Jews out of Jerusalem, and he named Israel Palestine back in 135. Why? It was to mock the Jews. The name Palestine is a derivative of the word Philistine. And so Palestine, the name was just to mock the fact that the Jews were kicked out of Jerusalem. And so that name was never an official state or an official recognized country. It was really a region known as Palestine. Now, through the years, people that lived there could be Jewish, Palestinians, Arab, Palestinians. If you were an Italian, you lived there, you would be an Italian Palestinian, and so on. It was never a country. And there is no such thing as a Palestinian people. It's people who live, like, we're Americans, right? But you could be from China, you could be from the Philippines, you could be from Mexico, but you could still be an American. And that's kind of what this was. There isn't a race of people called Palestinians. That's a little backdrop there, a little detour. Oh, we better get going here, or else I'll never get done. So anyway, the League of Nations, then, they divided the land of Palestine into Palestine and Transjordan. So that's where you have, across the Jordan River, you have Jordan there now. So beyond that, then we move on here. 1937, the Brits were getting a little tired, by the way, of all the squabbling that went on between the Jews and the Arabs and so on and so forth. So in 37, the British proposed a partition of Palestine into two independent states. Well, the Arabs did not want that. The Jews rejoiced in it. Well, in the meantime, you have the Holocaust going on. Well, in 1947, the British then wanted to terminate their mandate. They were done with this. And so, based upon some earlier documents going back to the early 1900s, there was the Balfour Declaration, which Lord Balfour was a believer. He believed that Israel should have their own state. He wrote a letter to Lord Rothschild, and that became British policy, that the Jews would have their own state. Over the next few years, there was what's called white papers were written each successive white paper changed the Britain's policy to give Israel the land, or the Jews the land. It diminished Britain's commitment to the Jews with each successive white paper until finally the last white paper that was written in 1938 basically said the Jews can't own property, and they limited the Jewish immigration to Palestine at that time. The Brits were backing out, and you could see the sentiment in Britain against the Jewish people growing, probably bowing to Arab pressure that may have had something to do with oil. So you keep that in mind as well. So as we move on here, the League of Nations is dissolved, and it becomes what? The United Nations. So another global entity. In 1947, Resolution 181 was passed, 33 nations voting in favor, 13 against, to support the land for Israel. So this was to recognize that land would now belong to the Jewish people. It was a vote of the UN, 33-13. May 14th of 1948, Ben-Gurion, the Prime Minister of Israel, stood up before the Knesset and declared the statehood of Israel. That night, at midnight, the Brits' involvement expired. They got out. They had actually been arming the Arab people. Israel could not legally own military equipment because they weren't a nation. The Brits kept them from arming themselves. You couldn't get airplanes, anything. Now, there's other stories behind all of that, how Israel ended up arming themselves. It's very fascinating. But Israel had to, in 1948, defend themselves starting at midnight of May 48. Well, we know Israel won their independence, and they defeated the coalition of Arab countries around them. So, I'm going to interject something else here too with all of this. So number one, anybody could go on Wikipedia and just look at those statistics I just shared with you. That's not from a Jewish source. You could Google everything and find out all that happened historically, that that land was not stolen by the Jews. They're not illegal occupiers. It was mandated by a global entity, and then that group voted to allow Israel to have their own land. That is history. That is fact. Israel didn't grab the land. As a matter of fact, as the Jews moved back to Israel, they began to buy up the land from the Arabs who left. So the Jews bought the land and worked the land, and it is a beautiful land today. Now, let's narrow this down to the Temple Mount. The most contested, what do they say, 30-some-odd acres on the planet. It's the most volatile place on the planet. Now, what about the Temple Mount? Who owns it? Well, we believe that Solomon's Temple was built on the Temple Mount. We believe Herod's Temple was built there. The Jews believe that. But today, if you talk to a Muslim, they say, no, the Jews were never there. This has always been, the Golden Dome was built back in the 600s. You know, Islam didn't start till the 600s, by the way. But that's ours, it's always been ours, and so on and so forth. Well, I have a little booklet here. It's a copy of a booklet. And this booklet was written in 1924 it was published by the Supreme Muslim Council. Now, this is very important here. It wasn't written by Jews. It's a brief guide to El Haram, El HaSharif, Jerusalem. Now inside of this, you don't have to try to read that because it's right here. This is what the Muslims wrote. The site, the Temple Mount, is one of the oldest in the world. Its sanctity dates from the earliest, perhaps from prehistoric times. Its identity with the site of Solomon's Temple is beyond dispute. This too is the spot, according to universal belief, on which David built there an altar to the Lord. Now, today, they deny this, but this was written by Muslims. And here's an article that just came out, and this was in Israel Today. Saudis say that the Temple Mount and Al-Aqsa, not important to Islam. Now, the Temple Mount and the Temple Mount represents for them the third most holy site in Islam. It's not the most important. But they will fight tooth and nail to keep it. Why? Because the Jews want it. And that is basically what it is. I think it's so interesting that back in the 20s, the Muslims and the Arabs recognized that really was a Jewish holy site. But I tell you what, if Jews try to go up there today and worship and pray, they are arrested. So, whose land is it? Who took the land? Well, first of all, the Ottoman Turks, the Muslims, took the land. And they conquered it. But they were kicked back out, right? By the world. There's a lot of history to that. Now, how long has there been a Jewish presence? I'm going to go back to the 1500s when you can look at population centers at that time. In the 1500s, there were 5,000 Jewish people living in the land we know as Palestine back then. It has only grown. We're not going to read all of it. 2023, 7.1 million Jews living in the land. That was 2023. Jews continue to make aliyah or go return to the land to this day. And there are growing over 7.1 million Jews living in Israel. The first time in modern history that there are more Jews in Israel than in any other single location on the planet. It's finally eclipsed New York City or LA or Chicago. By the way, there's a little over 15 million Jewish people on the planet today. Well, that's almost back to the pre-Holocaust numbers. It's taken this many years for the Jewish population to grow. Now, why is this important? Well, ethnic cleansing. Let's talk about this for just a moment. Off to the left, you can see here's some countries named and their population in 1948 of Arab population or Jewish population, excuse me. So, back in 1948, in Egypt, there were 63,500 Jews living in Egypt. Today, they can only account for 3. Syria, 40,000 Jews in Syria in 1948. Today, there are 0. You go down the list. Every one of these countries that would have been also Muslim countries included, you can see thousands of Jewish people living in those lands. And today, it's reduced to a few thousand total. In sum, 0, 0, 1, 4, 0, 3. Israel, on the other hand, you look to the right. The Arabs in Israel in 1948, 156,000. In 2023, 2.1 million Arabs who live in Israel, who work in Israel, who make their homes in Israel, and occupy their place in cooperation with the Jewish people. Arabs in Gaza were 48, was only 80,000. Today there's 2 million Arabs living in Gaza. When you look at this, who is guilty of ethnic cleansing? Is it Israel? The numbers scream, no, there is no genocide, there is no ethnic cleansing going on. That doesn't mean every Israeli is right in everything that they do. And there are violations, human rights violations by some. But above everything else, for the most part, Israel is not guilty of genocide, apartheid. In fact, they're one of the most inclusive countries in the world when it comes to government and some policies that we wouldn't even agree with at all. So when you look at that and you hear these people crying genocide, apartheid, occupiers, history itself says, nope, they didn't steal the land. Now, I want you to go to Psalm 105. Here. We want to look at a biblical part of this as well. Psalm 105. Verse 8. He has remembered, he is God here, he has remembered his covenant forever. The word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, the covenant which he made with Abraham and his oath to Isaac, then he confirmed it to Jacob for a statute to Israel as an everlasting covenant, saying, to you I will give what? The land of Canaan. There is no other people group, ethnic group, country that God has promised any land to except the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So he says, I'm going to give you the land of Canaan as the portion of your inheritance. When they were only a few men in number, very few and strangers in it, and they wandered about from nation to nation, from one kingdom to another people, he permitted no man to oppress them, and he reproved kings for their sakes. Do not touch my anointed ones, and do my prophets no harm. Well, there were times when God disciplined the people of Israel by allowing Babylon to overtake them. But guess what? Babylon was judged by God for that too. So any country that oppressed Israel paid the price for that. God promised them the land of Canaan. God gave that to them. That's been their land. And if you go back to the conquest of Joshua in the land, ever since Joshua conquered the land, there has been a Jewish presence in that land. In 586, when the Babylonians took the Jews into exile, they didn't take all the Jews. There was a number of Jews who continued to live in Jerusalem. Folks, there has always been a Jewish presence in the land, going back to the conquest. Keep that in mind. Now, go over to Psalm chapter 83. This is not a prophetic psalm, but there's something you're going to recognize. If you think back with me in history, there was a man by the name of Ahmadinejad who was the president of Iran. He regularly made a claim, as did Yasser Arafat, and as has done, I get my words tangled up here, Abbas in the West Bank today. Notice these words. Verse 1, O God, do not remain quiet. Do not be silent, and O God, do not be still. For behold, your enemies make an uproar, and those who hate you have exalted themselves. They make shrewd plans against your people and conspire together against your treasured ones. And they have said, come and let us wipe them out as a nation, that the name of Israel be remembered no more. Folks, this anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, Jewish hatred goes back centuries. When you read about Esther, Haman wanted to wipe the Jewish people off the face of the earth. Hitler wanted to wipe the Jews off the face of the earth. Today, that is the claim, and that was Ahmadinejad, so they want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. If you were to travel today to the south, the Gaza Strip or the West Bank, and you were to open up an atlas that the kids have in school, if they have school, you would not find the word Israel on any map. It would be Palestine or something else. They want to wipe Israel off. Why? They hate God, if you will. It's a diabolical scheme. Satan hates the people of God. He hates the church, the body of Christ, but he hates God's chosen people because they're God's chosen people. And if he can prevent Messiah from coming, he tried that, didn't he? Tried to wipe out all the babies. Tried to wipe Messiah from coming. Couldn't do that. So then he'll try to wipe out the people so that Messiah has no kingdom to come back to. I think what you have today with Jewish hatred and anti-Semitism is indeed a diabolical plan. Now, is there any good news? I have some good news for you. And then maybe some questions. Here we go. A little over a year ago, I was invited to a Bible study down here in your neck of the woods, not too far from here, in Pullman, actually. There was a joint Bible study from students at Washington State as well as University of Idaho. And they wanted me to come and teach about the kingdom and about the return of Christ. Now, this group, it was quite a combination of people that would be dispensational in their view, or some were covenant reformed. There were some agnostics, there were new believers, some growing believers. So it was quite a mixture. And so I taught for about an hour, and then we opened it up for question and answer. For 3 hours, these young men and young ladies had these wonderful questions for me. They weren't like gotcha questions. They wanted to know, what did the Bible say? Not what my opinion was or what some author said. They wanted to know about this. I was so refreshed. I was there for 4 hours. I drove home, got home at like 1 o'clock in the morning. I was so excited. I called Carolyn and I said, honey, I cannot believe what I just experienced. These young people, they're not like the woke leftist that we always hear about. There are young men and young ladies out there who want to know the truth. That's your grandkids, great-grandkids, your kids. Pray for them. Pray for our younger generations today to know the truth of who God is and His Word. Beyond that, here's some statistics that are really encouraging, if you will. This goes back to 2017, and this is just growing. 21% of Jewish millennials believe Jesus was God in human form who lived among people in the first century. This, folks, is a game changer. There are a Jewish younger generation who are willing to say that Jesus was God in the flesh. Wow. Boy, I tell you what, that would make a rabbi's toenails curl. 66% of Jewish millennials are very open to exploring other faiths other than Christianity. Today, there is a Jewish generation. They are rejecting Judaism and all the trappings of that. They're moving off the kibbutzes. They are looking for truth. They're willing to explore Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism and, yes, Christianity as well. 34% said belief in Jesus as the Messiah is compatible with being Jewish. Wow. Folks, the door is opening in Jewish evangelism. As a result of the war, by the way, after October 7th, there were the believers. There's about, they say, they estimate about 2,000 believers in the IDF today. That number has risen quite a bit. So if you're a believer and you're serving in the Israeli Defense Force, one of the young men that we know his family, said he was blown away by the requests by fellow soldiers coming to him and saying, tell us about Messiah, when the war broke out. So you have to know that there is a seeking that's going on, and there's more requests in Israel for New Testaments today than ever before. Folks, when you pray for Israel, pray for the peace of Jerusalem, that they would know the Prince of Peace, and that the gospel would go out. I could go on and on about other things that are happening. What I want to do right now, and I'm kind of taking liberties here. Do you have questions for me about Israel, about what's gone on in the war that I can fill you in on, maybe some of the stuff that I've shared? Any questions that you have, even prophetically, I'm game, whatever you have. I know this was the morning service, right? So we're going to do the Passover after this. So we'll need a few minutes to get set up. But in the meantime, do you have questions?
This doesn't have anything to do with, except just now you said about the need for New Testaments.
Yes.
How does one help with that?
That is a really good question. Oh, Victor. Victor Kalischer. So, Friends of Israel, we have our one of our men, Menno Kalischer. If you've ever read the book Zvi, Zvi's son is Menno. He's a pastor at Jerusalem Assembly. His brother, Victor, is part of, it's something Bible Society. He makes sure those are distributed. I can find out through Menno's, I can talk to Menno and ask him about that, and he would know how to get money or whatever to Victor to distribute those Bibles.
Can he actually purchase them there?
Yeah.
But yes.
He has a...
It's like a bookstore.
Well, he has a network, and also a lot of it online that Jewish people can order from him, and it comes to their house wrapped, very secure, so no one knows what it is. It's to get it in your hand. Because a lot, like you said, with the Orthodox.
Yes.
Culture is not allowed, but God really needed to get the New Testament into Israeli Jewish.
So it's not like somebody's got to take a bunch and sneak them in.
Oh, no, you can buy them.
You can buy them here. So the way you could help is provide funding.
Yes.
So yeah, when he makes sure that if whenever there's a request, and he's had so many requests, so he makes sure they're delivered however the person wants it to be delivered, whether they need it a copy, you know, it's a variety of ways that, so that's Zahid's son that does it.
Victor Kalischer. So that is, we can put you in contact with that. So, and there are, through Jerusalem Assembly, by the way, the church that is part of Friends of Israel in Jerusalem, and we also have a church in Rehovot down by Tel Aviv. They've all been involved in humanitarian, reaching out in humanitarian ways to members of the IDF and their families, providing food and clothing. And you have to know that when the war broke out, the southern border down by Gaza and as well as up north, those border homes were destroyed. So those people, the Jewish people, have nowhere to live. So they've moved them into hotels and such in the center of the country, but they have no clothing, they have no food, nothing. And so the body of Christ, by the way, has risen to the occasion and is cooking every day for these evacuees and these people that have been displaced. So the body of Christ is very active in Israel, and there are the Israel Relief Fund through Friends of Israel helps support all of that. And so that's a way of building a bridge to the Jewish community, is providing humanitarian needs, food, clothing. We have even provided the military. You have to know that on October 7th, they were not prepared in many, many ways for that war. They called up over 350,000 reservists. That gave them roughly 500,000 military personnel. They didn't use all of them at that time. They only had 140,000 active soldiers. They had no way to provide the boots, the coats, and everything needed. So Jerusalem Assembly, our money was funneled there. Every dollar that's given to Jerusalem Assembly is used. They don't take any percentage off. That money is used to provide not only food and necessary items for IDF families, but also units that need boots, that need military-grade coats, that they can order up and get there quicker than the military could. And so that's how the body of Christ has been actively involved since the war. So, anybody else? Question? I have answered every question.
What part is he actually fighting?
Erdogan? He's a stinker. Yes. President of Turkey, he hates Israel. And he would like them wiped off the face of the earth. Now, he played nice with them for a little while because it was to his economic advantage. Now, when Donald Trump was president, he was part of what promoted the Abraham Accords. Okay? So, Erdogan wasn't part of it, though. He didn't want anything to do with that. However, Donald Trump's administration had this idea that quit trying to get the Palestinians to come on board, work with the surrounding nation, the Arab nations, get them to cooperate with Israel, and they'll put pressure on the Palestinians. Well, that was going to happen until he lost the election. So there were a number of bordering Arab countries that have normalized relationships with Israel. It's to their economic benefit. Erdogan does not want to do that, and he's in cooperation with Russia and Syria. And he will no longer provide airspace for the United States to fly over them, or Israel and what have you. He hates the Jewish people, and he's vowed to kill them.
So he's actually put himself in a position of power.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, he was voted in. Barely won the last election, which I thought was interesting in those countries. He won, barely. So he's now president again. So he's in a position of power in... Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He would pander all kinds. Yeah. Yeah. Did you have your hand up?
Well, I thought he had just won. There must have been some kind of false report or something, and then it changed. I don't know.
Well, he did win. He won.
I thought he had just lost. Oh, no.
I think he won, but... Well, let's Google that and find out. I don't know. I thought he won, but barely.
Yeah.
But
So basically, he's, I'm trying to think the processes and the political side of it. Turkey was part of the Ottoman Empire. Right?
Yes.
And so I think he still has the mentality of the Ottoman Empire.
Yes, he does. Absolutely. Yeah, he would be of the mindset that the land, what we call Israel today, should not be with the Jews. It should still be part of the caliphate. So, yeah. Different kind of mindset. Here in our country, by the way, we don't think this way. For them over there, this is a religious war. This is a spiritual battle. We think in terms of geopolitical. That's not what's going on over there. This is a spiritual battle. They say, driven by Allah, that's our land. We want it back. And you're not going to ever have a two-state solution with them. They don't want it. They want a one-state solution. Get rid of Israel. They don't want the Jews at all. So don't, when you listen to the media, two-state solution means nothing. It's, they don't want that. Yeah. The Jewish people are very high on education. Education is so important to them, and to go to a prestigious university means much, much more. Now, you find that in population centers more, okay? But that's what they are taught. Social engagement and education, those are just huge in the Jewish community. So, therefore, if they can go to Columbia or NYU or one of the Ivy League schools, that's a feather in their cap. But they're finding it's not such a great place to be right now. And so many, even Robert Kraft, who owns the New England Patriots, is pulling, he's a Jew, pulling his support away from Columbia University. And you're finding a lot of wealthy Jewish supporters of these schools pulling their support out. So what are the presidents having to do? They're having to do something. They hired these anti-Semitic professors, for crying out loud, but now it's turned and they're having to backpedal, and they're trying to save their bacon by we've got to keep these Jewish supporters.
What
not
you have to understand too is there also are some Jewish groups that are joining this protest.
Yes.
There is a segment of Judaism that is anti-Zionist.
Yeah.
So There is that element too, that like even on October 7th, some of the people that were killed that lived right on the Gaza border were living there as kind of peaceniks, like, oh, but we can get along, we're going to prove it. They were slaughtered.
They were slaughtered, yeah.
For, you know, so anyway, there is that element within Judaism too of anti-Zionism.
Well, within the Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox, they don't believe that the land is theirs until Messiah comes back. So they don't have a right to the land until Messiah returns. That's their view, although they live there today.
Or that could be why some aren't returning.
It is. Definitely. Yeah. There's anti-Zionism. And in Scripture, do you remember that? And I can't remember the text, but it talks about how the Jews will be brought back to the land by hook. God's going to have to drag them back to the land. So there's going to be Jewish people that don't want to go, but they're going to be regathered to fulfill end time prophecies. So, boy, this I'm going to have to come back and talk more prophecy, because it gets exciting when you hear more about it. So God has something in store for the Jewish people.
Oh,
Sarfati. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. Yes. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I thought you said something else. I'm sorry. Amir Sarfati. Let's see. I should have. I can tell you what.
He's not traveling anymore. He's staying in Israel this year.
Well, I don't blame him.
Start the process of teaching Jewish people truth.
Right. Sam, I'll send you something, but I have a listing of online resources. His being one, Behold Israel, and his Telegram site. But also Joel Rosenberg, who is a Jewish writer and believer. He has now moved to Jerusalem. He's part of Menno's church, by the way, Joel Rosenberg. He has an All Israel News website that is excellent as well. Wonderful articles. Amir gives you up to date, you know, but you can get like 30 things in an hour, like, oh, stop, stop. But oh, yeah, there's all kinds of them there, which is wonderful. But Joel Rosenberg actually has news articles written that are very, very helpful. So I'll get that to you. So there are sites you can be up to date on what's going on. So, folks, we've just barely scratched the surface this morning, but I think we probably need to take a break, and we'll get ready for a Passover or something. Yeah?
One more question.
Oh, sure.
Aside from what you've been presenting.
Uh-huh.
I know you folks are on mission status.
Uh-huh.
Can you give us an idea of how your support is doing?
Sure. So with the Friends of Israel in my role, we are missionaries with the Friends of Israel. So we raise our own support. And we're right around that 90% supported. In all of our years, we've never been quite at 100%. We're at that 90%. And our needs... So just in a nutshell, our support includes our living wage that we need to live on, but also all of our ministry budget, our travels and all of that comes out of this. Our life insurance, retirement plan, yeah, like I said, all of our travel budget, everything comes out of that. So when people give to the Pierce account, for every, you know, it's 100% goes into our account. Friends of Israel takes no percentage off. So it's all there. And so where our need is right around when you put everything together with the health benefit and life insurance and everything, ministry, it's about $8,600 a month, which seems like we don't get paid $8,600 a month. We'd be like, woo, yeah, come work with us. No. We get a salary to live on, but that's a small portion of, but that's the whole picture. So we're about 90% of that right now. So that's kind of where we're at. So if you have any questions about that, feel free to ask us. So thank you for asking. So appreciate that. So I'm done for a minute here, so we can take a break and...
Shuffle around. 174.